I'm going to talk about processes which take place immediately after the end of inflation, but before the radiation starts to dominate the expansion of the universe. So the outline of my talk is the following. First, I'm going to show what do I mean by the physics of very early universe, and what do I mean by the intermediate stage between inflation and radiation-dominated stage. I call it reheating and temporization stage. I'm going to show you a couple of field theoretic models based on non-perturbative effects in non-equilibrium quantum field theory, which lead to efficient reheating and thermalization in the early universe. And then I'm going to discuss a couple of observable effects of reheating. So let me begin. What do I mean by physics of the very early universe exactly? So this is the overall time scale, the scale of energies, the scale of temperatures of physics we are dealing with. The idea is the following. At energies larger than 10 to the 18th GeV, you have presumably some ultra-high energy physics, supergravity, superstrings, quantum gravitation. I can say that you have nice control over theory and the scales. Then, at next point is 10 to the 25 Kelvin, 10 to the 12 GeV. A lot of physics happens here. This is ground unification theory scale, as well as inflationary scale, as well as the scale of asymmetry between baryons and non-baryons in the early universe. So then we have a huge window between 10 to the 15 and 10 to the 25 Kelvin. We don't know about physics here, in fact, at all. We do have some information from ultra-high energy cosmic rays about what can happen here, but no nice theory, no nice understanding. At 10 to the 15 Kelvin, you finally reach physics, collider physics. So you can collide particles and see the real effects. At scale about 100 MeV, you have become finite. So that's basically where usual particle, high energy particle physics starts. Scale about 100 MeV, you have to become finite. At scale about 1 MeV, you have the binding energy in nuclei. So that's basically when the usual physics you deal in real life starts. This is as well scale of primordial nuclear synthesis. At energies about 10 eV, you have binding energy in atoms. That's when you, in fact, have matter. At temperatures about 1 Kelvin, 100 Kelvin, you finally have our main kind. That's where we live. So, by non-equilibrium physics of the very early universe, from the particle physicist point of view, I mean exactly this window. So I'm interested in what happens here. And I'm going to be quite conservative. I will suppose that no new particle contact lives there. And what happens is basically particles of standard model have very large energies, very large temperatures. And this should describe the physics here. So that's the same picture from the point of view of cosmologists. This is not energy scale, but the time scale instead. Between 10 to the minus 44 seconds and 10 to the minus 37 seconds, you have inflationary stage. And as you see, the evolution of scale factor, the evolution of expanding universe, universe expands according to exponential law here. After 10 to the minus 35 seconds and before 10 to the 12 seconds, you have very long radiation-dominated stage. And physics here in here is actually very different. What you have in the end of inflationary state is future universe 10 to the 60 times larger than it was in the beginning of its evolution. And it's absolutely cold and absolutely empty, because the whole energy density in the universe is located in the condensate of inflaton field. But here physics is instead very different. What you have here is very hot plasma, in fact, so hot and dense that the optical thickness of this plasma is zero. You cannot send photons in the very basically you cannot receive photons from the very universe to get information about stage what happens here. So you see that you have two very different stages, and you need to match physics between them. So it gives you an idea how complicated this match, how complicated the physics of this short intermediate stage. What would happen here is you need to see complete decay of inflaton field, and you need to refill universe with particles of usual standard model. And you need to thermalize it. And all this would happen in very short time scale. Let me tell you a couple of things about later stages. 10 to the 12 seconds radiation dominated universe changes, regime of expansion dominated by radiation changes to the regime of expansion dominated by matter. And that's where we live. About 10 to the 17 seconds, we can think about new inflation, in fact, because today at very large scales, at redshifts about 1 to 3, you see again exponential expansion. You see that the universe is dominated by random processes. In fact, can be interpreted as a second stage of inflation. Okay, so how do you exactly make decay of inflation? So let me take the simplest idea. Suppose the inflaton doesn't interact with particles of standard model at all. This is very attractive idea because it means that you will never see inflaton particles in real life in collider experiments. So can you actually make inflaton effectively decay into particles of gravitational field, and then these gravitons decay in the particles of standard models? The answer is no. So the idea is very simple. Suppose you have standard chaotic inflation model with potential like m squared pi squared. So phi is the inflation. As you see, the interaction with gravitational field always contains the vertex of interaction with gravitational field. Field always contain two propagators of phi. So in fact, it's not. There is no particle decay of phi in the gravitons. What you can have is basically annihilation of two quanta of inflaton field, producing two quanta of gravitational field or three quanta of gravitational field. And in expanding universe, this is very ineffective process because what you have is expansion. And basically, if you have two quanta, it's very hard for them to meet each other to annihilate in the expanding universe. And once universe expands, it's even harder and harder. So it means that you have a lot of quanta of inflaton field in the early universe, if you suppose that inflaton decays by this channel. So in fact, you can calculate this number. It turns out that the overall energy density which sees the inflaton particles even after they decay in the gravitons and freeze out of this annihilation process happen, you see that the omega is supposed to tend to some. Well, you know that omega should be order of 1. So no way you can inflaton particles can decay on this channel. You need the direct interaction between inflaton and the particles of standard model. And the particles of standard model.
Supposing it were true that you had a hybrid model where m was actually changing in time, so m during inflation was different than it was at the beginning, how big would m have to be to make the argument fail?
Actually, I don't know. So this calculation, this calculus 17, is just taking the Corbin normalization into the minus 6 and 1. So I just, M should be really comparable, I would say, with M block, because you see that the cross section of annihilation is suppressed by inverse powers of M block. So to get this cross section pretty large, you need to get the same of order of M block.
Can you have the inflator? Why does it have to go directly to certain order of fields? Can you go to some other?
Yes, that's what I'm going to discuss.
Okay. So it has.
Let me take the simplest model like this. Interaction between inflaton and another scale of the chi, also this fairness. Unfortunately, I forgot to include kinetic term. So you do have one particle decay of inflaton and the two particles of chi here and the two fermions here by these interactions. You can estimate characteristic time scale of these decays. So that's the gamma of the decays in the scale of particles of the gamma of the decays for the fermions. You see that if you take characteristic coupling between inflaton and fermions for 10 to the minus 5, you get 10 to the minus 27 seconds time of reheating. Well, this is still fine because the upper bound is basically 1 second nuclear synthesis happens. So it's fine. The only problem with this is that actually, in almost any theory you pick up, they exist. A non-perturbative channel of decay, and it actually dominates heating. In particular, it exists in the theory like this. So we can have really more effective decay of inflaton particles, the particles of type, and the characteristic scales here will be not 10 to the minus 26 seconds, but 10 to the minus 35 seconds. And it means that, in fact, if such a channel exists, everything will sit on all the physics of reheating will sit on this channel, will be completely dominated by this channel. And one channel is basically enough because you will have the growth numbers of particles of other fields that usually is getting effects if you produce a lot of particles. Okay. So let me give you an example of non-perturbative channel. But first, let me figure out one thing. So can I have non-perturbative decay of inflaton interference? I cannot because I have Pauli block. I can produce a lot of particles, a lot of fermions in one state. I can produce some different fermions, with the projection of spin. So the same story is with gauge bosons. Inflaton cannot carry charge because charge conservation will prevail inflaton from its decay. So I will have again only annihilation of two charged inflaton quantum in the particles of matter. So as you already know, in expanding universe, this is not a very effective process. So in fact, the only option which remains is decay, effective decay in the particles of other scalar field or scalar modes. Let me give you an example of model. The model will be like this. You have the gravity term, you want some Gilbert actions. These two terms dominate during inflation, and the corresponding inflation is just usual chaotic inflation. And I have another scalar field chi, which is massless, and which interacts with the field phi by this quartic term. So what is the idea? During inflation, I have slow roll of the field phi. I start somewhere at values of phi much larger than M Planckian, and then it slowly rolls down towards the minimum of this potential. When phi reaches the value about M Planckian of over 2, slow roll condition breaks down, inflation stops, and inflaton starts oscillating as minimum of its effective potential. As you see, the same thing happens with the effective mass of kite. So if I have an oscillator with oscillating frequency, I immediately have a parametric resonance effect, as I know from classical mechanics. And that's basically how I, that's how I produce my particles in the moment. So previous slide was about the ground dynamics of the field, of the fields phi and chi. So now, what do I mean by particles here? So I decompose my field chi into modes because I don't have translational invariants a long time in this setup. I have expanding universe. My eigenmodes are not Fourier modes, but I do have translational invariants in this case, so it's basically just Fourier modes. The equation for the modes, depending on time, is this one. So you see that I have basically two effects of expansion. First, I have this friction term for the modes, and second, I have a usual redshifting of momentum for this modes. So still, I can reduce this equation in such a way that it will be the equation for oscillator. It's basically rescaling like this. I look at the oscillator like this, and as I know, if I have an oscillator with variable frequency, one thing is conserved is if frequency doesn't change very quickly. So the thing is adiabatic invariant, which is basically the energy of oscillator divided by omega. So the thing is conserved. So if omega dot over omega square much less than 1, then an adiabatic invariant which plays the role of number of particles to quantum mechanics is conserved. I don't produce any particles. But if omega changes pretty quickly, or if omega in this condition reaches 0, near zeros, I do produce some particles. So, and you can see production of particles in this picture. That's what happens during reheating. Inflation ended somewhere here, and that's basically the vacuum wave, the vacuum fluctuations of the fields. And then I have a huge production, a very, very huge production of particles here. Approximately during 10 to the minus 37 seconds. This happens due to this parametric resonance effect. And then, at some point, it stops due to the reaction of produced particles into the dynamics of the ground fields. So this parametric resonance structure is very complicated, actually. So the parameter which drives, which controls whether you have effective production or non-effective production is the following thing. So phi here is the function of oscillations of inflaton with the minimum of its potentials. M is inflaton mass, and G is the coupling between phi and chi. So you can derive that the number of particles growing this time behaves like this. It's exponential growth, but the point is that mu k is a complicated function of k and this parameter q. So if you pick up the infrared mod k corresponds to zero, then you see that you have particle production here, you don't have anything at all here, you have particle production here, you don't have anything at all here, and so on.
Can you think why the production of the chi particle stops? Because it modifies the frequency of oscillation of phi, and then it goes off resonance?
It goes off the structure. So basically, first of all, yes, it does modify frequency. So basically, from here you go to here.
And the effective potential phi changes, and the frequency changes, so it goes off press.
Exactly. And second effect is due to the expansion. You have a redshifting of modes, so k basically changes also. So it also goes from this.
Yes.
So let me give you another example of non-perturbative production of particles to the universe. So there are a lot of models of inflation when like hybrid inflation, for example, you've mentioned. When the in the end of inflation fall down a slope with a negative, the scalar field in the end of inflation fall down a slope with a negative curvature. And it leads to huge production of particles at modes with k less than effective mass m squared. So suppose I want to discuss the dynamics of spontaneous symmetry breaking. No expansion of the universe in this case, just simple field theoretic model. Potential like this leads to minimum. So I will have a production of modes with k which is less than a basic Hackeyonic effect. So, and what happens, in fact, is the following. You start the motion of inflaton somewhere here, it goes down, it goes down. Delta phi square is growing due to the production of perturbations. They can hardly be called particles because these are not usual Fourier waves. It's exponentially growing solutions. But at some point, your theory is going to reach the true minimum. And there you do have particles when you start to oscillate with the minimum. It turns out that you have a lot of particles in this state, in the final state. So in fact, the number of particles is inversely proportional to the coupling lambda. So you see this is not a perturbative effect. At small lambda, you have a lot of particles in here. But I'm going now to show you a nice video. How it really happens. So what you see here, this is a three-dimensional simulation of spontaneous symmetry breaking. Flat space-time, just field phi. Simulations are three-dimensional, as I said, but what I have here is two-dimensional slice of three-dimensional simulations. So along axis z, the theta, you have amplitude of the field phi, and along axis x and y are basically space coordinates. So what you have initially is random Gaussian fluctuations of the field phi after inflation.
What sort of boundary conditions do you use on the simulation?
Periodic.
Periodic.
Of course. Because this is the only option I have like that. I want to be simulations as large as possible. So this is already pretty large lattice. So in fact, I don't believe in boundary conditions are so important to me at all. So that's the beginning. Inflaton, the only important component of the dynamics of the input on the dynamics of the ground. And here starts the spontaneous symmetry breaking. You produce bubbles of different phase. And very soon dynamics becomes quite chaotic.
What are the different colors supposed to be?
They don't have any meaning, just for the sake of beauty.
Probably just the slope. Usually mathematics.
Just the slope. So because you already fixed the boundary conditions of your field, this new phase, the bubbles of new phase should decay into something. And what they decay into are basically particles. What you have in the end here is a lot of waves with random phases, which can be interpreted. This is a classical picture, but from the quantum point of view, they can be interpreted as particles.
So this was a classical simulation?
This was a classical simulation. Why can I do classical simulation in this situation? The idea is that you produce really a lot of quanta in this situation. So characteristic equation, particle numbers like 10 to the 10, 10 to the 11. So you really don't care about quantum corrections. So it's essentially a classical evolution of boson particles. So let me now tell you finally what I did in this science. The problem with usual parametric resonance model when you have just quartic interactions, that inflaton doesn't decay completely. Unfortunately, after the end of reheating, you still have a lot of particles of inflaton. They are massive, and since massive matter and the density of massive matter behaves like this, and the density of radiation and this matter behaves like this, this going to dominate at later times. So basically what happens, you are going to force universe. So we need completely different photon. How do you do that? You have some linear interaction between the main photon and the surface of the field. That's it. And here the situation is slightly different. That's the effective frequency for the particles of chi. And as you see, when Mt is equal to zero or pi or something, so this term dominates over this term, so quantic interaction is not important at all. And in fact, you have a kind of tachyonic effect here, because omega square, if you have just a linear interaction, you look like this. So what happens? You have a tachyonic production of particles in this region during half of period, and you have a parametric resonance during another half of period, so also kind of matching between parametric resonance and tachyonic effect. And another surprising effect is the following. So usually in quantum field theory, you neglect non-renormalizable terms, because you know that if you take a continuous limit of lattice field theory, you know that the only terms which survive the continuous limit is renormalizable terms. Not so in this case. It turns out, in fact, that quintic term dominates reheating. Because, and the point here is that phi can reach the value of Planck. So during inflation, phi is as large as Planck. It doesn't quite work in string theory, because in string theory, inflaton and the scalar fields are basically modular. When you say that they are reaching the value of Planck, it means the corresponding geometrical sizes of the Planck. So you're out of supergravity approximation here. But I'm using field theoretic models, and I'm perfectly fine with it. Naively, you would expect that non-renormalizable terms are not important here as well, because they're suppressed by enclosure. They're suppressed by additional powers of effective cutoff in theory. But the point is that phi can reach pretty large value. So these terms, in fact, can be larger than usually normalizable terms. And this is the case. What happens in reality? Non-renormalizable term like quintic dominates reheating, but linear interaction dominates rescattering, because collision of three quanta is much more probable than the collision of five quanta.
I'm sorry, just to make sure I've understood this. So you're saying that phi is large compared to capital M in that formula there, is that right?
Phi is maybe before the left. So M here is in Planck. Yeah, and watch.
So you don't really believe that expansion at that point. You really, there's some complicated function that the first two terms don't capture.
So I don't believe my expansion if my higher terms are larger than the previous terms. But I can arrange that my higher terms are smaller than the previous terms. So, I can show you.
You mean you're just going to choose the lambdas to be small?
I'm going to choose the lambdas to be slightly smaller than 1, for example. My inflatons, my inflation stops when phi, for example, 0.1 and 1. So next terms are small because of that, because you have additional powers of 0.1, basically. But this term can be large with respect quantic interaction or linear interaction. So reheating indeed is eliminated by not first non-perturbative term.
when you do your discretization to do with numerical simulations and you have all of those non-renormalizable interactions in the modified
simulations that you saw here are basically just vorticons, linear interactions. We didn't
see. No, but when you discretize it, you generate all of these interactions anyhow. So
yes.
You don't have any control over it exactly, though. It just comes from the discretization.
Yes, but you write down your equations for the lattice, right? And you can control which interactions do you have. You can just keep quartic interaction on the soul. So basically, the equation will be. So what is the continuous equation? For example, I have theory of light. What is the continuous equation? The continuous equation is something like this. So basically, my lattice. So it's fine. I didn't generate anything back. So what I solved in numeric simulations, I solved this kind of equation.
I guess the lattice introduces higher derivative operators. Rather than fractions to the potential.
Are you using a square lattice? I mean, what kind of lattice are you using?
Square.
Yeah, well, that's going to generate all kinds of quartic and whatever interactions just from symmetry breaking. You don't have rotational symmetry. Yeah. We can talk about that later.
Sure.
Let me show some results. Of numeric simulations here. So what we see here is the following. This is the number of particles as a function of wave vector k. And this is wave vector k, both scales of algorithm here. Colors mean the following. Red colors mean earlier times. Blue colors mean later times. So what we see here is initial Gaussian state of fluctuations, and you have some generation of infrared modes. And this is reheating basically. Here, reheating already stopped, but you have thermalization produced quantums for this. But they basically scatter on each other. And you have spreading of spectrum, usual turbulent spectrum. The difference between these plots and these plots is the following. Here you have three linear interaction and quartic interaction. Here you have just quartic interaction. So you see that addition of silinear interaction just slightly changed the dynamics. So yes, you produce slightly more water, and reheating was slightly more effective, but generically it didn't change the situation much.
So are these graphs in an expanding background?
These are in an expanding background, yes. So these are the numbers of particles which are produced during the heating. So again, the same story. Here you have quartic interaction. Here you have three linear plus quartic interaction. And as you see, inflaton doesn't decay here. That's exactly what we want. So if you have quartic interaction, inflaton doesn't decay. You do produce a lot of quanta, but then the number of quanta of inflaton mass quanta remains constant. That's why you look across the universe. But if you have silinear interaction, you see that the inflaton quanta slowly decaying 50 times. They produce particles of kind. Also, you see that thermalization is much quicker if you have linear interaction. This is very famous effect from turbulence, from weak turbulence. If you have a kinetic equation with three-wave interaction and four-wave interaction, three-wave interaction is going to always dominate for four-wave interaction. So what's plotted here is more or less the following. This is the spectrum k square omega k in k. Taken at some particular moment of time, which is mt equal to 1000. This model is just quartic interaction, and this model is quartic plus linear interaction. So you see that the spectrum is much more spread towards the ultraviolet in the case once the linear contraction is present. So, okay, what was it all about actually? Maybe I don't have to care about what happens during reheating. Indeed, what I have after the end of reheating is completely thermal state. And this state already forgot about all the details of physics, which we were in the earlier times. The only information I have is basically reheating temperature. So can I have some observational effect from reheating? The answer is yes. And this is one of those effects, for example. The point is that reheating is so quick, and the expansion of universe, the regime of expansion of universe during reheating changes so quickly that in fact you have to have some responsive metrics on this quick change. The idea is the following. So immediately after the end of inflation, you have matter domination, because the whole energy sits in the in-photon field. And if you have massive in-photon field with a potential like this, this corresponds to the equation of state W equal to zero, non-relativistic particles. They're heavy, they're non-relativistic, so equation of state is only equal to zero. So, and the density behaves like this. But soon after the end of reheating, you produced a lot of radiation, and this radiation starts to dominate expansion of the universe. So you quickly jump to omega, to W approximately 1 over 3. And in fact, this change and the change of regime of expansion is so quick, it happens during 10 to the minus 37 seconds that metric has to have some responsiveness. It indeed has, and the idea is the following. In different Hubble patches, you have different lengths of preheating. So you generate long-range fluctuations, long-range gravitational fluctuations. This is usual modulated fluctuation effect discussed by Kaufman, for example, or Valier-Friedrich-Zolderian. So you do produce some correction to CMB power spectrum from this effect. So let me demonstrate.
How large are these fluctuations?
Can be, in fact, depending on model very much, and can be, in fact, comparable to the usual contribution calculated from chaotic equation.
The effective coupling is because the effective coupling in different patches is different because the field is different.
Effective coupling in different patches is different. Exactly. It's different, and as you see from this plot, if I vary coupling slightly, I do vary the length of repeating stage. So, if I have, for example, string theory, when all the couplings depend on moduli are like fields, for example, then couplings do depend on the position in space, and you have long-range fluctuations in different Hubble patches. You have different ways of couplings, different lengths of heating, then you generate this contribution. So this is the first thing.
So you, can I ask, during inflation, W is minus 1.
Exactly.
So by plotting that W continuously from minus 1 up to 2.
So let me plot the dynamics of W as a function of time.
Thank you.
First, during inflation, you have minus 1, as you said. Then immediately after the end of inflation, you have W equal to 0. Because energy density is determined by the inflaton still. It didn't decay. And the inflaton is a massive particle, so it's only relativistic matter. And then you have reheating, and W jumps to only equal to 1%. So first you generate some cosmological perturbations here in the end of inflation, and then you generate some cosmological perturbations here between the end of inflation and the radiation dominant stage.
And for you, in your W equals zero phase, is that L equals zero dominated by the energy of the field apparently sloshing around its potential, or is that a gas of particle mass and then the gas of
So first you have a condensate, but then you produce these particles as well. But what I'm talking about here is the Kegelian condensate of phi. So here is another example, another effect of reheating. So suppose you want to calculate such thing as the number of inflationary folding as a function of wavelengths of observable cosmological perturbations at current time. So because this thing depends on the whole history of scale factor, starting from inflation up to the current time, it does depend on physics of reheating as well. Because you have a contribution here from inflation to the end of reheating, that's the contribution from reheating. And we did calculate this contribution, and in fact we found a correction to the number of refolding, which is not that small actually. So 62 is from inflation, and the contribution from reheating is about 0.5. And since this is observable, you can see it. So let me now tell a couple of things about thermalization. The problem about thermalization is more or less the following. You do produce a lot of particles of various fields during reheating. The problem is they are not in thermal state, but you do need a thermal state at later times, after 1 second, for example. But what you produce is more or less spectrum like this. So this is k is a function of k in logarithmic scale. What you produce is this. What you need is equipartition spectrum. So there is a very long way to go, starting from this non-equipartition spectrum to this spectrum. And this is exactly the process of thermalization. The problem with thermalization is that it can take pretty long time. For example, if you take a conformal theory like lambda phi to the 4 without any mass introduced in there, in fact, thermalization never happens. This was found a couple of years ago by Michi and Kachov. And the idea is almost the following. You can write down kinetic equation for the interaction between quanta produced. And you see that this kinetic equation is exactly the equation of weak turbulence of sound waves in the surface of liquid, which interact with each other. And you do know that the spectrum which is produced is usual spectrum of turbulence scaling is scaling like this. What happens this time is the following. You just keep to have the spectrum k to the minus 3 over 2 and never get thermalized state. So the big problem, right? You can get thermalization in fact only when the occupation numbers in the effective cutoff of your theory drop down at the level of order of 1 when the quantum effects should be taken into account. So maybe quantum effects will solve the problem of thermalization. But at this moment, effective temperature will be already very low, about 100 keV. So how to solve the problem? One idea is more or less the following. You should look in the infrared part of spectra. You will immediately see that in the infrared part, spectra become equipartitioned at very early times. So our idea was more or less the following, that infrared part of spectra, this characteristic k numbers, less than 10 m or m, which is 10 to the 6 10 to the minus 6 Laplacian, which is a huge mass. In fact, it is enough for any physics you see around. This spectra thermalize very quickly at time scale of order 10 to the minus 35 seconds. But you basically just don't care about what happens with ultraviolet photospectra. So you say that you have a kind of pre-thermalization. Effective temperature in the infrared part of spectra drops very quickly, not due to expansion, but due to rescattering effects. So, but you do have a kind of thermal distribution in the infrared part of spectra. It also affects pre-thermalization. And another thing about pre-thermalization is that different physical quantities are in fact thermalized at different scales of time. So quantities like effective equation of state thermalize immediately. So as you saw, it jumped to the value of order 1 over 3 immediately after the end of reheating up to 10 to the minus 35 seconds. This is already equilibrium value. In fact, it's not going to change up to this point. But if you take a look on the spectra of particles produced during reheating, you see that the actual equilibrium, they didn't reach actual equilibrium.
And the problem you're describing is not specific to this conformal model, but you're saying that in the conformal model, it's particularly easy to see this.
So this problem with scaling like this is, of course, specific for the conformal model. If you introduce some scale m, you immediately see that spectra will slightly change. But the question is, what is the rate of this changing? How quickly thermalization happens? The answer is that thermalization happens at very, very long time, like way longer than 1 second in these models. So you don't want to wait for complete thermalization.
But that number, I guess the question is, how does it scale when the scale? So you put in a scale to get the thing, which is not the asymptotic one.
What you want to find in the end of the thermalization process is the equipartition spectrum.
But I guess what's going to know at the time scale for that, how does that scale with the mass scale that you put in to the problem?
It's longer, actually.
Is it
what we found from simulations is longer. I can give you a formula. I can give you a formula which shows how it actually it for sure depends somehow on the mass parameter, because this is the only dimensional quantity which you have in the area. But as well, it can depend on exponents, logarithms, and whatever you can learn. What we found from numerical simulations, that the actual thermalization scale is much longer. Or just 1 over m.
But longer in the sense that it's exponentially longer, or is it parallel longer?
You see, I cannot answer this question, because the problem with this lattice simulation is that your spectrum is cut off pretty quickly, and basically you just don't know what happened further. You don't believe your simulations. But it's definitely much longer than 1 over. Okay, so that's what is done. What are we going to do next?
So before you leave this, just to kind of tie it together in my mind. So the bottom line, you start off by saying that the things like spinodal decomposition or hermetic resonances are going to make reheating be faster into the inflaton sector than you would have sparked before if you're doing things perturbatively. So that means it's much more efficient than people sparked before, and the temperatures will be higher than people sparked before. But this last thing you're saying is that
in this case, you don't have effective thermalization.
Right. So that you're getting the energy into these models, but you're not getting a
The good thing about perturbative decay, perturbative reheating, is that you produce particles, and these particles immediately interact with each other. So the time scale of interaction between particles is approximately the same as time scale of perturbative preheating itself. It means that they thermalize more or less at the same scale. So what you get in that of perturbative reheating is thermal spectrum. And this is nice. The problem is that whatever theory you pick with scalar field, you almost always will have non-perturbative channel preheating. This is quite universal. And if such a channel exists, it will completely dominate the whole history of reheating. Reheating will not know anything about the channels if it has one of these.
So, which is good, so it happens fast.
It happens faster, but thermalization scale, on the other hand, is very, very long.
Well, that's the interesting thing. So then the question would be, I guess, so far you reheated the intercon, and then you want to reheat the standard model, reheat at some level, and so.
Yeah.
So, what sense are you trying to get is how model dependent the statements are here, and for example,
so statements about thermalization are actually very model dependent. So the number, if you increase the number of matter fields which interact with your field phi or your field chi, of course thermalization is going to happen faster because the number of channels of interaction is much larger. So I guess it's something one over n if you like.
Supposing it's very weak. Supposing you had an inflaton sector and it's weakly coupled to the standard model sector. So what you're describing.
And strongly coupled to this field chi, for example, right?
Well, I guess you want to know how the answer depends on the coupling. So is it at the very beginning you ruled out things like decays and annihilations because they were less efficient than what you're describing. But if the channels, supposing those are the only channels available to the standard model for reason freedom, so supposing you get all this to work, it's very efficient, you thermalize the inflaton sector.
Yeah.
How hard is it to convert that into a hidden sector which is so strongly coupled to the sector you've been talking about?
Through perturbative channels.
So say there's some non-normalizable interaction.
Non-normalizable interactions.
But that basically seems unstable though, so they can all decay now into this other channel.
So my understanding is that my statements about preheating are quite universal, so don't depend on coupling much, because well, they're non-perturbative.
But they rely on stability.
If you take cup, yes.
And since stability is going to change, if I start coupling these things to another sector, which is a weakly coupled to light, so now there's a channel for draining energy out of that sector.
Yeah.
And so is there a sense as to how strong that has to be, or how important the stability of these conditions? Yes.
So. Again, if you have just one non-perturbative channel like this, the heating will go through this channel, it doesn't matter how many fields interacting with inflaton you have. The reading channel will dominate the whole dynamics during the heating. Thermalization is a different story. If you have many fields, thermalization goes faster, even if effective coupling is small. Thermalization just in a sense proportional to number of fields. Time of complete thermalization proportional to the number of fields. So if you have a lot of these fields, thermalization is going to be much faster than it is short. And another thing that I have this pre-thermalization situation. When the infrared part of spectrum thermalizes very quickly. But what do I mean by infrared? If I have wave numbers smaller than the inflaton mass, which is 10 to the minus 6 blankets, more than enough for any physics I can imagine in real life. So everything is thermalized at this scale. Temperature just changes in different ways, just huge expansion, that's true. So what I'm going to do next? The problem with all this, from my point of view, is that after 25 years of investigation, we are still stuck with this quasi-classical language, with BKB approximation, with oscillator of variable frequency. This language is fine when you just start investigating reheating, when you're investigating the early stages of reheating, immediately after the end of inflation, when you are in the linear region. But suppose you want to discuss qualitatively such questions, how quickly thermalization happens, and how quickly rescattering of produced quant happens. For this, linear approximation doesn't quite work, and we need some different languages. The point is that recently, non-equilibrium diagrammatic techniques and non-equilibrium quantum field theory finally reached the level when you can discuss physics of reheating by using its methods. Works of Berges, I guess you know about them, 2 NPI approximation. So that's the problem. we are going to rewrite everything in the language of non-equilibrium quantum field theory and really understand how strong coupling kinetics of produced quanta immediately after the end of reheating happens. And I also would like to notice that, in fact, a lot of problems of quantum field theory in curved space-time also require non-equilibrium linkage. One example is, for example, scalar field in the space-time of the receiver. So if you calculate correlation functions of free scalar field on the sitter, for example, like this, you are going to get usual five-step answer, which is this one. But on the other hand, this answer diverges when I send them to zero. In fact, it goes to infinity. What is the meaning of this infinity? The meaning is very simple. In fact, this correlator depends on time. Take planar patch of the sitter. So it turns out correlator behaves like this. And the overall picture is the following. Suppose you picked up some initial value of this correlator, then it's going to linearly grow until it reaches the equilibrium mass. There is very another that it figures out. So if you send n to zero, what happens in this situation? This correlator just keeps growing and growing infinitely. So in a sense, you don't have a nice out state. So you are in the situation of non-equilibrium quantum field theory. And if this is so, my next question is whether quantum gravity indeed requires non-equilibrium language to formulate it, because you need to integrate over all the metrics you can imagine in the partition function of quantum gravity in the sitter space metric. This is basically what I wanted to say. So.
At the time of the electron weak transition, which is I think 10^-10 seconds, mm-hmm. is it expected that the universe is in thermal equilibrium?
I think the idea is the following. All the calculations for the space transition, of course, performed for thermal situation. But whether do you expect the thermalization already happens, that I don't know. I think you, in pre-thermalization situation I just discussed here, you still can do electroweak phase transition. So what controls whether you have electroweak phase transition or not? It's more or less the energy density, the local energy density, not the temperature. You don't need to have the temperature. So I guess my answer is no. You don't need complete thermalization of systems to get electroweak phase transition. In some domain of space you may have this phase transition, in other domains no.
So in the lattice simulation I showed, after a while you get this really very, very inhomogeneous.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens with the long range correlations to the homogeneous? You would want the universe to be homogeneous on very large scales after this stage.
In fact, if you have this random phase waves, if you average over phases, you immediately see that the overall stage is completely homogenized.
Okay.